Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
The Warriors got the win on Saturday against the Pelicans. Kevon Looney came back to town, and the Warriors got a much-needed win after falling to the Rockets the previous game on Wednesday. And now we go out to the River Islands guest line for Steve Kerr, presented by Great Clips in Sports. Success is about team effort, and the same is true for your hair. Great Clips, it's going to be great. Steve, great to have you on Willard and Dibs. No Mark Willard, it's Dibs and Grandy with you. First of all, hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for coming on. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. And I like the Arsenal sweatshirt. You're enjoying yourself these days, aren't you?
I am. Appreciate that. And thanks for noticing. I know you've had a connection and ties to Liverpool. Is that correct?
Yeah, I actually have a connection with Arsenal as well.
Oh.
So I've become a big Premier League fan the last few years. And but Mikel Arteta has become a friend of mine. We do kind of a coaching thing together on Zoom where we, you know, share ideas and thoughts, and he's an incredible guy and obviously a great coach. And but yeah, it's really fun watching the Premier League and seeing how, you know, other leagues are going about their business, other coaches. So I really enjoy that part of my job.
I'm fascinated. I know you've talked in the past about like tiki-taka in soccer and how it kind of translates to basketball. What are the similarities between soccer and basketball, and what can coaches of those two sports learn from each other?
Well, I think there's a lot of the similar actions that exist within the games, kind of, you know, triangles, three players working together, you know, one guy passing to another, the third guy cutting. There's all kinds of that in both sports. I can't claim to be a soccer expert, but I enjoy watching. And I think that a lot of the players who I've either played with or coached who have a soccer background tend to see the floor better on the basketball court. And so I think there are a lot of connections for sure.
How often do you guys touch base, you and Coach Arteta? Is it just an off-season thing, or, you know, you check in after games for him or games for you?
It's like about once a month we do these coaching Zooms. There's a group of coaches who, you know, we kind of we get together and talk about our teams and share best practices. It's obviously a private thing, but I was in London this past summer and had lunch with Mikel, and it was awesome to get to know him, you know, firsthand rather than just on Zoom. And my son Nick, who's on our staff, he came with me, and he's a huge Arsenal fan. He has been since he was a kid. My sister lives in England, and her three boys, Nick's cousins, are all Arsenal fans. So it transferred over to Nick, and he's loved Arsenal ever since. I like Liverpool because I'm a Mo Salah fan. I lived in Egypt for about 3 years when I was a kid, and I love the Egyptian culture, the Egyptian people. And when I first saw Mohamed Salah play soccer, I was like, that's my guy. That's an incredible player. And so I cheered for him, and by extension, I cheered for Liverpool.
Yeah, he's an amazing player. Congratulations on the Premier League title last year. I know it's been rough the last couple of weeks for Liverpool, but of course, a storied club. I'm curious about the way you felt your team responded on Saturday after a rough loss on Wednesday. You also lose Steph Curry. You eked that one out. You fought hard down the stretch. Jimmy Butler was great in that one. You got Jonathan Kuminga back. What did you see from your team on Saturday without Steph Curry?
Well, we gutted it out, and I think the main thing was we took care of the ball, and that is the number one indicator of whether we're going to win or not. And, you know, the season is always interesting. There's 82 games. It really is a marathon. I know that's a cliche, but it's the truth. And you go through these spells where you're either on top of the world or you're kind of down in the doldrums, and you have to navigate the season, and that includes plenty of stretches where you're kind of having to dig out a tough game. You know, even against a team with a bad record, none of these games are easy. You know, and the flip side is you have spells during the year where you feel like you can't lose, and the game comes a lot easier. But you have to handle both really well, and I thought we handled that part of it well the other night. You know, not in a great groove, not making shots, then, you know, get the job done, take care of the ball, and connect the game, and I thought we did a good job of that.
Yeah, it was definitely a gutted out kind of a victory where no shots were going in early, and you found a way to get some late, a couple of Kuminga threes as well. I do want to ask about Steph Curry and if you could offer any update on the quad and the reevaluation and just exactly what the next few days and weeks will be like for Steph Curry.
Well, I talked to him today. He was on the bike, so he was getting a good workout, good cardio workout. He's not on the court yet. We'll have an update on Thursday. So he won't play tomorrow, obviously, and you know, we'll just take it day by day. But I don't think any of us are too concerned that this is a long term thing. But we also don't have clarity on exactly when he's going to play.
So will he make the trip that starts Thursday in Philly, or is that still to be determined?
Still to be determined, and Rick Celebrini and Steph will put their heads together. And you know, we always look at our schedule while we're on the trip, you know, what it looks like in terms of practice time. Is it more productive for the player to, you know, to stay at home while the team's on the road because of the access to the gym and the training facility? And obviously all of that is dependent on how likely it is, you know, that you know, he could play or not on the trip. So all those things are to be determined.
Warriors head coach Steve Kerr with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Steve, from one Curry to another, I know that you guys announced today that you have signed Seth Curry for the rest of the season. I know he was with you guys in camp. You had to waive him because of second apron and salary cap gymnastics. I know there was a little bit of confusion from, I think, outside the team and the fan base on why the delay, because I think the money worked more towards the middle of November. It becomes official today. I was wondering if you could answer if that was just more salary cap gymnastics. And now that you have him officially, what does he bring to this team?
It was 100% salary cap gymnastics. You know, these aprons are really penalizing, and you know, by waiting until now, we're able to stay below the threshold, and it gives us more flexibility. And you know, those are Mike Dunleavy questions, but I know enough to know that you know, there was a reason we couldn't really do it until today. But we're thrilled to have him. Seth's been a really solid NBA player for a decade or more. One of the best shooters in the league, and doesn't turn it over, solid at both ends. So we're really excited to have Seth.
What's the ramp up going to be like to get him in there, and what do you foresee as his role in the rotation?
Well, we'll see. I mean, the ramp up, you know, he's a full go in practice and scrimmages, and he doesn't have any injuries. So, you know, I imagine he'll be active tomorrow night. That's the plan. And then we just have to wait and see. I mean, it's tough to, you know, to play more than 10 guys. And, you know, every game's a little different. And the way I approach it with all these guys, you know, eventually they're all going to get their chance. And then who plays is really dependent on how well the team is doing. If we're doing well, we'll usually stick with something. If we're struggling, then we'll, you know, we'll take a look at some other possibilities lineup-wise. So Seth understands that. He's been around forever, and I guarantee you he'll find his way out there at some point. But right away will be difficult, just because we've got to, you know, kind of see where we are.
Steve, maybe one guy coming back that might make it more difficult for you to determine rotations and who plays is D'Anthony Melton. I know the team released an update for him on Saturday, and in that said that there's a possibility that he could make his debut at some point on your upcoming three-game road trip, which begins after this game tomorrow against OKC. Is there any further update there? Do you know if you might have Melton debut at some point on the trip?
I expect him to play on the trip at some point. He looks good. He's scrimmaged quite a bit. He got another one in today. I think he's going to get another one in tomorrow, and then he'll be on the trip with us. And at that point, it's day to day. But I'm really excited to get Melt back. You guys got a glimpse of him last year. I think he played 6 or 7 games with us. He was a perfect fit. And it's exciting to think about plugging him in, because he's another two-way player, another guy who can play at a high level in a playoff-type game and survive quite well at both ends. So Melt's going to be a big help.
And based on that glimpse, and that's a great way to put it because he was gone way too soon, who are some of the players, combo-wise, that you really enjoyed watching him play with? Obviously, he didn't play with Jimmy Butler, but beyond that, who does he really pop and play well with?
Everybody. and really, that's one of the determining factors when you look for players is are they lineup dependent, or is the lineup just simply enhanced by their presence? And Melt is the latter. I mean, he plays well with everybody because he can dribble, pass, and shoot. He's fundamentally sound. He makes good decisions, and he's a really good on-ball defender. So all of those things lend to him being a good fit with anybody.
Steve, you also got a Jonathan Kuminga back after he missed 7 games. He played in that game on Saturday versus New Orleans. It seemed to me, just watching, didn't get his normal minutes because I imagine there's a bit of a ramp up there. What did you see from him on Saturday? What do you need to continue to see? And what has your team missed from Kuminga during those 7 games? Because it felt like there were at least a handful of games in there where he might have been the difference between a win or a loss. So what do you see from him, and how is he coming along as he gets back into action?
So he's a little rusty. I didn't think he was moving particularly well, but he hit 2 huge threes mid fourth quarter. We needed those shots. And so he came through for us. He was on a minutes restriction. So I think he played 18 or 19 minutes. The restriction will be lifted, as he goes. So as he continues to ramp up and build his conditioning, get his rhythm back, then there won't be any restrictions. I imagine that'll happen by the end of this trip. So it's all a matter of same things with Jonathan that we ask of him. Attack the rim, rebound, run the floor. When he does those things, he's really good for us.
How critical is it to get those restrictions lifted as you get set for 4 games in 6 nights in 4 different cities? You've got me thinking cities now, Steve. So when I look at the schedule, I look at games and nights and cities, and you got another little mini baby gauntlet here.
Yeah, we do. And that's why it's great to get Seth and Melt back. Jimmy will most likely play tomorrow after the hard spill he took the other night. Obviously, with Steph out, we've got to get guys to fill in. But I feel good about our depth, and I feel good about our ability to find different combinations each night that can allow us to compete and win.
Steve, I know you said earlier that there's no one in that organization that is fearful that Steph's injury is one that's going to be serious or keep him out for maybe anything more than a handful of games. But I'm curious, when you are playing without him, and maybe even in games while he's just resting, do you feel like there is, a need to maybe shift a little bit away from the offense that has worked for so long with Steph while he's not on the floor and lean into a little bit more isolation led by Jimmy Butler? Is that just a thing you go into while Steph is out and isn't playing?
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first 2 orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
In games, or can you do that also in games?
Well, it's kind of somewhere in between. It's hard in the NBA to just suddenly say, we're going to play differently. You develop an identity, you develop a style, and that style stays you know, regardless of who's out on the floor. So we're a ball movement team. We're going to move the ball, but there's no question our play calls, you know, when we're not in flow, when we're just, there's a dead ball, free throw, our play calls will reflect exactly, you know, what you just said, Grandy. We're going to get the ball to Jimmy. We're going to get isolated. We're going to let him attack and we'll get spaced. So finding that balance, whether we have Steph or not, is really important. I thought it was what we did so well last year after getting Jimmy. We were able to play through both guys and lean into the flow and the movement of Steph, and then also the isolation ability of Jimmy. And when we find that balance and we take care of the ball, we're really good.
Is it also reflected in maybe a slower paced game without Steph, like going to more isolation? Does that become more of a conscious decision for you and the team to play a little bit more slowly?
I'm not sure if that is going to work, really, frankly. I think in some ways we have to play faster without Steph. We need to our young guys to really run the floor because if we're running and we're taking care of the ball, it's just easier to get good shots. It's really hard to get good shots in the NBA if you're walking the ball up the floor and playing against a set defense all the time. So I think that's a little bit of a misnomer. We want to play fast, but we want to hit singles and just make good decisions so that we're not making mistakes.
Could you make the games go by faster? And I'm thinking about tomorrow, Steve, 8 o'clock start, which, as you know, really means probably 8:08. What do you think of these games with, you know, poor Grandy in the post game not starting until midnight?
Yeah, I mean, it's not our favorite. It reminds me, you know, if you play in the finals and those games started, you know, 8:30 local time and in the East. So we've had some of these late starts, you know, in our playoff runs, but the 8 o'clock start at home, not ideal. You know, we do get some 8:30 starts when we're in the central time zone for, you know, TV purposes, but this is the first year we're getting the 8 o'clock starts on the West Coast. I think it's a direct result of the new TV deal. So, you know, you don't ask. You just go play when they tell you to get out there.
Steve, I don't know if this has been officially announced by the team just yet, but there is at least reports out there that you guys are planning to sign LJ Cryer to a two-way deal. He's been playing with the Santa Cruz Warriors down in the G League. So if you can't officially comment on him signing that two-way deal, at least what have you seen from LJ Cryer while he's been down in Santa Cruz, and what kind of player is he?
Yeah, he's a really talented player, you know, undrafted out of Houston, got a great college experience. A guy who's been well coached and with Kelvin Sampson at Houston, and, you know, Final Four experience. Loved him in camp. He had some really good games for us, and he's tough. He's a competitor. So he's a guy we liked before the draft and after, and happy to have him in our program in Santa Cruz. And he's a guy we think very highly of.
Just one more on player personnel stuff. Al Horford, what's the situation with the sciatica, and are you expecting him to be available some here on this trip?
Yeah, we are expecting Al to be able to play on the trip. He'll be on the floor tomorrow. He's getting a workout in today. He'll be on the floor tomorrow, and our training staff will get a good look at him and get a feel. He won't play tomorrow night, but we'll get a good feel after these 2 days of workouts whether he'll be available on the trip or not.
Steve, big challenge tomorrow. The defending champs, OKC, in town. I know you played them a couple of weeks ago in OKC. It was a game that you guys weren't really that competitive in. Since then, they've gotten Jalen Williams back, an all-star last year, probably the second best player on that championship team. How big of a challenge is OKC? Do they remind you at all of your teams back in the day when you were rolling through the regular season? Just how good and how big of a challenge are they?
Well, they're on a 78-game win pace, so that's pretty good. I mean, it's crazy how good they've been at both ends of the floor, and they're very different stylistically than we were, you know, in our heyday. They're a driving team. They're an attacking team. Not as much ball movement as we had in our, you know, in our run. But you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams, the ability to attack gaps and draw fouls and get to the rim, and then a suffocating defense. I mean, there's a reason they're the defending champs, and they're 20-1, whatever. They're amazing, and we got a huge challenge ahead.
Yeah, no doubt. And speaking of challenge, you had me thinking about Saturday night, and Grandy and I were talking about it, where they review a play to see if it's a flagrant on you guys, and then upon further review, I'm sure you guys realized already it was a foul on them, so the review goes your way, and then you challenge. You and I, Steve, are kind of in lockstep on this whole cockamamie, let's review it system, but that had to feel pretty good, right, when you got to twirl the finger and the call actually went your way.
Yeah, it does feel good when you win those, but it doesn't feel great overall for the game to me. And I get it, you know, with all the camera angles now, with the gambling, you know, sponsorships, with all the gambling that goes on out there, the officials are under such a microscope. You want to get everything right. The problem is, this is not tennis. It's not like, well, the ball's either in or out. You know, it's not baseball. You either beat the throw or not. Almost all these calls are really filled with gray area. And there's a handful like that one the other night that are they're obvious, and you're able to challenge and get it reversed, and it feels good. But to be perfectly honest, I would like to throw the entire replay system in the trash can.
Oh, me too. And it just had me thinking about whether or not you have like internal team fines for when a player twirls his finger. Do you have like is that like $100 or something? Please tell me it is, because you know, and you don't have to call out the guys on your team, but the finger twirlers on your club, if I were you, and I wish I was, but I'm not, there would be a fine system in place for the twirl.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between the composed player twirl and the emotional player twirl. And it's up to us to discern between the two, for sure. But there are times where I'll just challenge if I feel like it'll help the team emotionally. Not often, but sometimes you just do it just to support your player. We've had a couple of those this year, but yeah, you got to be careful, because those are really valuable, you know, down the stretch of games.
And when Draymond twirls, you got to challenge it, because he's such a savant, right? That he's probably correct more than he's incorrect, and you got to support him. You don't have to answer that.
Well, I know you said you weren't going to mention names, and then you mentioned Draymond's name.
I didn't want
name.
You to mention names, but because, I mean, when Draymond twirls, honestly, I think he probably has a case. But other players, when they twirl, I'm like, come on.
Yeah, the problem is you have to delineate Draymond's passion from his basketball IQ. Mm-hmm. And so they don't always match up. So I don't think his overall challenge record is great, to be honest. But that's okay. We love Dre. We win because of Dre. So if we challenge a few to help him out, I'm willing to do that.
Small price to pay, no doubt. Steve, we appreciate your time. Best of luck tomorrow versus OKC, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thanks, Steve. That's Warriors head coach Steve Kerr with us here on Willard and Dibs. No Willard, Grandy and Dibs with you. Largely good updates from Steve Kerr. And injury-wise, they don't expect the Steph Curry thing to be serious at all. Don't know exactly when he's going to be back, but does not seem to be more than a handful of games. He expects both Al Horford and D'Anthony Melton to play on the upcoming road trip, and Seth Curry going to make his Warriors debut in all likelihood tomorrow.
And 4 games in 6 nights, as I mentioned to Steve, 4 different cities. And interesting that Steph will be reevaluated on Thursday, and they'll already be in Philadelphia on Thursday. So unless he gets reevaluated here, and if it's good, he flies to Cleveland for the Saturday game, or maybe he gets reevaluated on the road. That's why I was curious as to whether or not
good question.
He was planning on making the trip, because you might just say, you play Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. You might just play it safe and say, all right, Steph, just stay here and we'll aim for the game, which isn't until Friday the 12th. They have a nice 5-day break thanks to losing out in the cup.
Yeah.
They've got those two games got added, but they don't play again until a week from this Friday. So you could give them a little bit more time to get fully right.
Yeah. Friday, December 12th versus Minnesota here in San Francisco. And then Sunday, December 14th in Portland. Those were the two games that got added once the knockout round of the in-season tournament, the NBA Cup, now that they call it, wrapped up. So the Warriors, they're still off, though, from Sunday, December 7th, 6 days from now, until Friday, December 12th. So you have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday off, which is kind of like a mini All-Star break for the Warriors there while some of the other NBA Cup action takes place. So that is an opportunity to get situated, get healthy once again, but it does feel like the Warriors are getting to a point where once Steph comes back, they're probably going to be as healthy as they've been all season long, unless something happens, of course, tomorrow or Thursday or on this road trip. But reinforcements are on the way. Seth Curry. I was wondering about Seth Curry for a while, and it seems like almost every postgame show I do, I get the question, where's the update on Seth? When is he going to sign? The math was such that he could have signed like on November 12th. It was something like that. And the way it works is his vet minimum contract prorates based on the number of days that have passed in the season, and they only had X amount of money to be able to spend because they are hard capped at the second apron. Basically, they only had X amount of money, and the full season contract for Seth Curry was too expensive. You let a month of the season pass by, then they can afford it, but they let an extra like 2 or 3 weeks pass. And my understanding is, Steve said it's salary cap gymnastics. It's just in the future, if they want to make any other moves, every dollar counts. The longer they waited, the little bit more flexibility they got, it would make a future trade easier. So I think they just waited as long as they possibly could until they felt comfortable making the move, and that move ultimately comes today.
Yeah, and so you get a chance to see him tomorrow and then a lot more on the road trip. And the D'Anthony Melton is probably the best news because, yeah, it was a glimpse last year, but yes, boy, he looked like a natural, like Steve said, a two-way player, and he fits with everyone. And you start to look at the minutes on this team, and minutes are going to be hard to come by. Okay, Pat Spencer, who played 15 minutes the other night, his minutes mostly go away. Guy already lost his minutes, but you start thinking about Buddy Hield and GP2, who had his best game of the year, best game in a long time. But
yeah,
you start to add in D'Anthony Melton, and when Al Horford is healthy enough to play, these are all guys who are veterans who are going to eat away at some of these younger players' minutes.
I think Melton's really important because we think back to last year, and we remember that he got hurt, and we remember that the Warriors were off to a really good start while he was healthy. I think we forget the impact that he had. He jumped into the starting lineup. You remember when Steve Kerr started the season by starting Kuminga at a spot where he normally doesn't play him, and ultimately they decided, you know what, we're going to move to Melton as the starting two guard. It was going to mean Pajemski was going to come off the bench, and Melton immediately flourished alongside Steph. Not that he was putting up crazy numbers or anything, but he takes some of the ball handling pressure off of Steph. He's a really good perimeter defender, at least he has been throughout his career. We will see what he looks like after another major injury, and this one an ACL surgery, not a full ACL tear, but the full reconstruction. And I think when you look at what has plagued the Warriors, Dibs, so many people will point to the size and the lack of rebounding. And could they use more size? Yes, absolutely they could. But what hurt them against Portland, what hurt them against Houston, both the losses on this homestand, it was the defensive glass. And again, size would help, but I think it's also when you can't stop drivers, when you have no point of attack defenders or not good ones, guys are getting past the initial wave of defenders, then Draymond or whoever the big is down low has to get off his guy to go and help the driver. And then you don't have anybody set to box out the big guy down low, and it leads to an easy offensive rebound. So I think just better point of attack defense, namely from D'Anthony Melton, will limit those situations. And therefore, I think the Warriors will be in better position to grab more defensive rebounds. And I think that won't become nearly as much of a weakness as it currently is right now.
Yeah, and that's a great way to break it down because everything is interconnected. And if you do get better on-ball defense, it's also going to help you defend the three more because you won't have dribble penetration and players able to, you know, get the help and then kick it out to open three-point shooters, especially in the corner. So if you can contain the dribbler, it's going to help you not only rebound better on the defensive end, but also close out to shooters as well.
Yeah.
Melton last year, six games for the Warriors, two starts, and he averaged 10 a game in those six that he played, and then that was it.
Last game he played, memory serves, it was Clay's return to Chase Center. Is that right?
I'll check. That sounds like...
And he hit a big three in that fourth quarter before Steph took over and ultimately willed the Warriors back.
Yeah, look at you, the memory. Incredible. 120 to 117. Because he missed five games. He played three.
That's right. I forgot that he missed
five,
a few.
And then he played three. And yeah, that was it. He had 14 in that game.
Because that game against the Mavericks was the 15th game of the year?
11th, yeah.
11th.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. Good memory, though. That's a good poll. Good pull by
you. Those highlights always stand out because everyone in the stands, you can see it in the background of every highlight from that game, everyone in the stands are wearing those white captain hats. And I can remember seeing that D'Anthony Melton highlight countless times. And, of course, that was the moment that Steph took over as well. But, yeah, it remains to be seen just how good physically D'Anthony Melton is and how long it takes him to get fully back up to speed. But if you get the Melton that began the season last year, and if you can get him healthy for the rest of the year, which I realize is a big if given his injury history, I do think it's going to be a major, major plus. But we shall see. There's no doubt it hasn't been the start that I was expecting, 11-10 through 21 games. This definitely has been the toughest part of their schedule. They should have beat Portland at home. They probably should have beat Houston. This is the opportunity to win some games at home, and they haven't quite done that. But there's a lot of season left, Dibs.
Tons of season, and you should have beaten Indiana with a double-digit lead in the fourth, and you probably should have beaten a Giannis-less Milwaukee team. So, yeah, you're not going to win all the games you're supposed to unless you're OKC. 20-1. 20.
They're so good.
And one.
And Jalen Williams has only played in two games.
Right. And he's like their fourth best player, or third
Probably
best
player.
Probably
their second best player.
Doesn't even matter. Is the point. And now they've got Hartenstein, and they've got Holmgren. They got the double bigs. They can hit you with double bigs.
And they just got highly drafted youth everywhere coming off the bench because they have, guess what, all of the draft picks.
Yeah.
You know who has the Clippers first round pick this year?
OKC.
Yeah. And
well,
the Clippers suck.
They do.
Year.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at. Well, the Clippers are really a lot worse than I thought.
They're
5-15, yeah.
They're terrible.
Slightly better than the Kings, but that's where this playoff push for the Warriors, it's not going to be that dramatic because there are 8 or 9 good teams and 6 really bad teams in the West. So you can almost struggle into it and still catch a 10 seed and be in the play-in at worst.
20-1. Is OKC through 21 games. It is absurd. They've won 12 in a row. They're not just winning, but they're decimating everybody that they play against. They are on a different level. Absolutely.
Did you
know
who beat them this season?
Wasn't it Portland?
It was Portland.
Portland has a lot of quality wins.
Yeah.
They beat the Warriors twice. They beat Denver. They beat OKC. They have some other good win. Did they beat Houston? I can't recall.
That was the second half of a back-to-back.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Where OKC was in LA to face the Clippers, then they went up to Portland the next night, and they lost, similar to the Warriors who had to go up there on the second half for back-to-back, and they also lost. So
yeah. Crazy. OKC, a really, really good football team. All right. That was Steve Kerr with us here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Great conversation, as always. If you missed it or you want to hear a part again, I might go back and re-listen to Steve talking about how he loves talking to Mikel Arteta because I am a big Arsenal fan. But if you missed any part of it, download the free Odyssey app. Give it a rewind. You can also rewind on YouTube as well. Plus, it will be on our podcast feeds shortly. Anywhere you get your podcast, just search for Willard and Dibs. Today, though, has been a lot about the 49ers as they beat the Browns 26-8 in Cleveland. The Niners now 9-4, and they're heading into the bye week with 9 wins. Out of the bye, they have the Titans. I think George Kittle summed this up pretty good. He was asked post-game after the Niners win in Cleveland to kind of take us through the current state of the 49ers, the 9-4 Niners, and here's what Kittle had to say.
I think looking from the outside in, if people would have said, hey, you guys are going to be 9-4 going into the bye and you're not going to have Fred Warner or Nick Bosa and Kittle's going to miss the first 5 weeks and Brock's going to miss six, seven games, I think a lot of people would have laughed at everybody. Kudos to our coaching staff, Coach Shanahan, Lynch for bringing in the right guys to fill in those spots, developing players, you know, to take advantage of those situations. How about Cleveland Farrell, like just coming back? I mean, it's fantastic. I think we're set up really well. These bye weeks, you know, get tricky because I think guys have just been looking forward to it. And so, you know, our message, I think Kyle say the message tomorrow is just like, hey, get away, do whatever you have to do. But just remember when we come back, we have four incredibly difficult games that are going to hopefully set us up to do something fun, you know, after the last game.
I think he summed it up perfectly. If you would have told anybody, but specifically us Niner fans or people in the Niners locker room, given everything that they've gone through injury-wise and also some drama, like Juwan Jennings contract drama early in the season, Ayuk drama that maybe played out in the offseason that we did not know about, but that clearly was going on the entire season, and then all the injuries to Purdy, to Kittle, to Bosa, to Warner, to Pearsall, to a bunch of others, to the offensive line, and yet they're 9-4, Dibs. I don't think anybody would have believed you.
It's hard to believe, but when you look at the games and you look back at last year, and that's why I go through every game twice or three times, and you can highlight certain plays that are made, and the Tonjes catch on a jump ball that led you to a victory, and you had the punch out against the Rams at the goal line that helped you find a way to get that victory. Last year, those were plays that you didn't make. You actually made the negative plays that allowed other teams to beat you. So a lot of times we look at quarterback record erroneously. The quarterback's record is only going to be as good as the overall team. Like yesterday, Brock Purdy was good. He was very good. He did what was asked of him, and he gets the win as the QB. But that win goes to a lot of other people as well. We don't ever talk about, like, the linebacker's record or the left guard's record. So, yeah, 9-4. If you look at each game individually, you could see where they won the game. They won the game because they made big plays in big moments. And, yeah, they had a backup quarterback who was a first-round draft pick who played well. And Cleveland Farrell, who was a top-five pick in the NFL back in his day, he's come in and he's gotten better and he's done well.
What was your preseason win prediction? Was it 11?
11, yeah.
That's what I had, too.
And I want to go back to the Red and Gold Summit and maybe replay what everyone was saying as we went around the panel.
You were the high point. No one had more than 11.
There was a lot of nines in there.
Maybe Willard also said 11?
I think so.
I don't remember. But everyone else was around 9 or maybe 10.
Right. There were nines and tens and, you know, words like rebuild and reload and retool and here we are at 9-4, and I didn't know then that you'd lose Bosa, Warner, Purdy for a long time, like, Kittle for a month.
That's the point. You said 11 wins, and you were expecting probably relative health. Not fully healthy. But
no,
like,
it's the Niners, so of course not.
Of course not, but you weren't expecting Bosa to miss basically the whole year. Right. Warner to miss the final two-thirds of the year.
Kittle missed, a month or more?
Five games, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Purdy missed eight games? Seven, eight? Whatever number, like half the season.
Well, he missed six in a row up until his recent return, but he missed two before that, so I do think it's eight. Yeah,
and he missed eight games. Pearsall missed five or six as well. Like, and you weren't expecting that, and you predicted 11 wins. They just need to go 2-2 in their final four to get to 11 with all those injuries.
And I believe that they will go at least 2-2 and get to 11. And you mentioned earlier about hope versus expectations. The expectation now is make the playoffs. If you wind up 9-8 and you miss the playoffs, that would be, and Steiner used the word earlier, collapse. I think that would be
absolutely
a collapse.
Yes.
Considering the opponents, you got three at home, you've got Tennessee as well. So I look at it now and I expect you to make the playoffs. And, you know, what happens after that is kind of a bonus.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The bye week is finally here. The latest it has ever been for the 49ers. I know some of them were in the locker room post-game yesterday talking about how they felt like it might never come, but it is finally here. Niners get to fly home. They get a week off. I know Kyle Shanahan was busy today with his conference call, but there's nobody in the facility, at least no mandatory stuff going on tomorrow or for the majority of the week. And then they gear up for Cam Ward and the Titans coming up next week before they wrap up the season with the Colts, the Bears, and then the Seahawks. All right, time for a break. When we come back, you want to talk about World Cup.
We get into it a little bit. The draws on Friday.
A little bit of news this week in that world. We were just talking about some Premier League soccer with Steve Kerr.
Yep.
Randomly, Dibs wants to get a couple of things out about the World Cup draw. We will do that. Plus, if you want to weigh in, you can do that as well at 888-957-9570. It's a Monster Monday presented by Merit America. Visit them at meritamerica.org/super. And we're sponsored by Crystal Geyser Alpine Springwater. More Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you. When we come back right after this on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, I actually have a connection with Arsenal as well.
Oh.
So I've become a big Premier League fan the last few years. But Mikel Arteta has become a friend of mine. We do a kind of a coaching thing together on Zoom where we, you know, share ideas and thoughts. And he's an incredible guy and obviously a great coach. But it's really fun watching the Premier League and seeing how, you know, other leagues are going about their business, other coaches. So I really enjoy that part of my job.
Yeah, download that Odyssey app. Use the rewind feature and you can go and listen to Steve Kerr in full. And thank you for that, Lucas. I'm just an Arsenal fan over here. Kind of in awe that the guy that I got to talk to today, you and I, Steve Kerr, is friends with the manager of my favorite soccer team. And I'm wearing their sweatshirt right now.
But yeah, and that's why he called it out.
Yeah.
He saw the sweatshirt because Steve Kerr joined us on YouTube. And yep. So he saw the Arsenal, and then he just casually, I can't believe Lucas didn't play the boop. Yeah, I talked to Mikel Arteta on the regular. You know, we do a coach's Zoom. And I should have asked him.
I was in London over the summer, and we got lunch.
I should have asked him who else was in on this coach's Zoom. He made it clear that it's private. Like, it's a private Zoom. So they just jump on a Zoom, and it's like, some of the best coaches and managers around the globe, and they just chop it up.
Nobody's a big fan of Jurgen Klopp, but I don't know if Klopp's still participating now that he's not currently managing.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. And, you know, I'm sure that Berhalter is not on there. Greg Berhalter.
Oh, God.
I'm sure he's not a part of this coach's Zoom, but just hearing him talk soccer with you got me thinking about two things. One, the World Cup, which is coming to America, Mexico, and Canada.
So excited.
Next summer, and the draw is this Friday, but it also had me thinking about, like, what's the best sporting event that you've ever been to, or what sporting event have you not been to that you really, really want to go to?
I have a couple of opportunities to check some bucket list items off with the Super Bowl here at Levi's in February, and then the World Cup all across the country and all across the continent, but specifically also at Levi's.
Yep.
So I haven't been to either of those kind of events yet. The best sporting event I've been to, I mean,
like the biggest or the best, and you know, you're still relatively young, so you haven't really probably gotten too deep into your sports bucket list per se. But you know, like,
I don't know,
Wimbledon is one I would love to go to, or the U.S. Open tennis tournament.
Same.
Haven't been to that. Went to the U.S. Open golf tournament. Went to the Masters and the Kentucky Derby, which was, I guess it was on my dad's bucket list, but he's from the old school where you didn't talk about bucket lists. You went to work and you shut your mouth. You didn't, oh, I wish I could do this or that. And so my dad was a horse racing fan. So in 2010, I arranged to take him out there with my two brothers. And so that was something that I think meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
Which was fun.
By the way, really quick, we're reacting to what Steve Kerr told us there just briefly. Tickets for all Warrior home games are available for purchase at Warriors.com. The Warriors host the Minnesota Timberwolves on Friday, December 12th at 7 at Chase Center. Even in the event of a sellout, tickets are always available at Warriors.com, where season ticket holders and other fans resell tickets that are 100% guaranteed by the Warriors organization. So tickets for Warriors home games always available for purchase at Warriors.com.
And this is being mentioned because this Minnesota game is the added game.
Yes.
So
along with the Blazers game.
The road game against Portland.
Correct.
But this is the added home game.
Yeah.
So because of the NBA Cup, you schedule 80 games for everybody. And if you don't make it into the knockout stage, you get an additional home and an additional road. This is the additional home. It's the Gobert v. Draymond grudge game. The T-Wolves. Coming to town.
And you get those extra added games against teams that didn't make the final eight of the knockout tournament, which generally means you get some of the maybe not greatest teams in the league, which is also an added benefit. I know that's the side of the coin that Mark Willard is always on. Lose the NBA Cup games, or at least lose enough so that you don't advance and you get some of the worst teams. Minnesota, not a bad team by any stretch. Portland, also a quality
team
if they are healthy.
Last year they had Houston. They played Houston for a fifth time, yep. And they turned out to be the 2 seed. So.
And they lost that game in Houston by a point, I believe. 91-90, if memory serves.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a flawed logical argument because even good teams sometimes don't advance in the Cup, and that was the case there.
Yeah. So what's coming up with the World Cup draw this week that we need to keep our eyes on?
Friday, they will determine the majority of the assignments for the teams. Now, in March, there's still some playoffs that have to take place, and you know they wait until March to actually do that. But the USA will find out at least 2 of the teams that will be in their group, and because they're a host country, they get to be one of the 1 seeds in the expanded World Cup format. And now 48 countries instead of the traditional 32, I believe, that there normally would be 8 groups
of
4.
Wow, is it really that many?
Yeah, 8 groups of 4, and now they've gone to 12 groups of 4.
Wow.
So the top 2 in every group advance, and then I think there are
a certain number of at-large wild card bids.
The wild-card third-place teams also advance, so the group play not as critical as it used to be, but one of the benefits of being in pot one, as they call it, it's the 3 hosts, Canada, Mexico, the U.S.
And then the best countries in the world.
The next 9, according to world rankings. So
like France and Argentina and Germany and all those things.
Keep going. You're doing great.
The Netherlands are in there. England is in there.
Uh-huh.
Spain is
in
there.
You got it.
God, I don't know who else.
Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
Portugal and Belgium.
Hmm.
So the U.S. is assured to not be in a group with any of those aforementioned countries. And then it'll be pot 2, which is the next 12. Pot 3 is the next 12 ranked teams. And not all of them qualify. And then pot 4 is a little bit of a wild card. You've got some of the qualifiers that are yet to be determined, but you also have Jordan, Cabo Verde making their debut.
Wow.
Ghana.
Where is that?
Cabo Verde?
Yeah.
You've never been?
No.
I'm a little surprised at you, Brandy.
Cabo Verde. Oh, it's a country in Africa.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. And Ghana, the Black Stars, who've caused the U.S. problems in the past.
Ghana, yeah.
Curacao, Haiti, and New Zealand. So the U.S. might get one of them, and then they'll get, you know, 2 other countries in the pot 2 and pot 3. It's a lot of mumbo jumbo, but Friday will be a big determinant of exactly, for the most part, who they're going to get. Mm. And you're also going to hopefully find out who will be featured at Levi's, because Levi's Stadium is home to, I think, 5 matches in the group play and then 1 in the knockout stage. So it's going to be exciting next year.
Yeah, we will see direct U.S. competition at Levi's from Group D, but no U.S. men's national team games at Levi's.
Correct. The U.S. is playing twice in L.A. and once in Seattle, but the other 2 teams in Group D, or 2 of the other 3, will be featured at Levi's.
But if the U.S. wins Group D, they will play a round of 32 match at Levi's.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's something.
Win Group D, and there will be U.S. men's national team soccer in the World Cup at Levi's, which would be awesome.
But at the very least, I mean, just to go there and see World Cup action, I was lucky enough to go to the 1984 Olympic soccer gold medal match at the Rose Bowl, France against Brazil, I didn't have any dog in the fight, but you're there at the Rose Bowl with 97,000 other people.
Amazing.
It's just awesome.
Absolutely. Hey, really quick, it's time for Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society San Francisco Bay Area. Well, with the Thanksgiving holiday, we have a couple of games to get caught up on. Despite the loss to the Rockets on Wednesday, the Warriors made 12 three-pointers and then made 12 more on Saturday in the win over the Pelicans, which means 2 more donations from Pettinelli to the Autism Society San Francisco. On Saturday, without Steph Curry, Pods made 3, Moody, Kuminga, and Hield all made 2, a couple of others each made 1. That's the 20th and 21st donations of the season for Triples for Autism. Yeah, now 21 for 21. To make a donation to Autism yourself or to get involved, go to sfautismsociety.org. That was Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society San Francisco Bay Area. Pettinelli is here for you, offering financial guidance and support throughout life's milestones, go to PettinelliFP.com. All right. Coming up next here on 95.7 The Game, it's Best of the Game with Lucas Alexander. Lucas, what is coming up next? What can you tell the people?
Hey, Grandy, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
I'm going to lead it off with Steve Kerr. It was a great, great interview. A lot of informational stuff and some fun stuff in there. Learning about Mikel Arteta, his relationship with Mick Arteta. And, yeah, you get to hear the whole thing starting in about 7 minutes.
Cool. All right, that's coming up.
I look forward to it, yeah.
And that's all the time we have today. Willard will be back after his Thanksgiving holiday. So it'll be back to Willard and Dibs coming up tomorrow. Dibs, great as always to hang out with you here on this side of the glass.
Yep.
Looking forward to doing it the next opportunity. But I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Enjoy the night, Monday Night Football, and we'll be back at it with the full show tomorrow.
You're off to a good start. You picked Patriots -7.5. They're up 17-0 early in the second quarter right now.
Glad I didn't flip the pick.
Yeah, we'll see if they can keep it up. All right, for Dibs, for Lucas, for Pasta, Steven and Risotto, I'm Mark Randy. Thanks for tuning in. Willard back tomorrow. Until then, have a good night on 95.7 The Game.